This is The Tenth Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The Tenth Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, KKFI listeners, and welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The Tenth Voice. I'm Fiona Nowling, here with my wife and co-hostess Una Nowling, and our friend and guest host, Ari Copeland. Behind the board today is our sound engineer and producer, still also my wife, Una Nowling, because she's engineering today.
I know, sort of an unexpected pleasure. I just came into the studio and Linda said, "Hey, do you want to engineer today?" And I said, "Oh, I'm sure glad I brought my headphones and everything."
Today, we would like to welcome to our studio a return guest, Dr. Hitchin Soni of Interpersonal Psychiatry, a psychiatrist who strongly supports the transgender community and is here today to talk about counseling the LGBT community and their mental well-being and how it has changed in the era of Trump. Welcome to Trans Talk.
Well, thank you, Fiona.
And Dr. Soni, could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your practice? If I recall correctly, you started out as an engineer, correct?
Absolutely. As luck would have it, we are in a room full of engineers today, about five, I believe. Yeah, so I started out my career as an environmental engineer. I was set out to change the world and save the planet Earth with my superpowers, and it turned out that it wasn't quite happening, and that kind of put me in a little depression that the state of water in Illinois was declining, and that was causing personal depression within me, and I had to go see a shrink. So there I am, and talking about how I really wanted to be a doctor all my life, and I only became an engineer to please my father. That is not at all nothing wrong with the patriarchy of the society that I come from. I'm just saying that then in the realization came in on the couch, as if it were, that perhaps I was in the wrong field. And when presented with the option, I said, "Well, you know, I want to be like you. I want to be like Shrink. I want to be like you." And that started my journey. And my lovely wife, Mamta, who's right here in the room, she made it all possible for me to quit engineering and pursue the career in medicine. And to make the long story short, here I am.
Now, you decided you wanted to become a psychiatrist and help people that way. Was there something about the LGBT community that led you to working with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it wouldn't come surprise to you, Fiona, that in medical school, especially even in a psychiatry, there is very little gender studies or sexuality or anything at all being taught. So at the end of the fourth year, I kept thinking, you know, this Freud and this preoccupation with sex, and when do we talk about this? I'm like running out of time. I'm in the end of my fourth year, and we haven't discussed anything, and it turns out that we are not. And it's like, oh my goodness, when am I going to learn about all these sex things that I'm supposed to learn about? And so I needed to go out and find additional training. And so I sought out more training at the Analytical Institute, and turns out that there we were preoccupied talking about Freud's shoe size and worshipping the great Freud. And it's like, well, where am I going to talk about the sexuality? Where am I going to learn? I needed to go find additional training. During my last year, when I was going to go for additional training, I was in the ER. Late at night, about 2 in the morning, Kansas City Police Department brings me this person in the ER about 2 in the morning, very cold night, and this person was about to jump off of the bridge. The Kansas City Police Department goes through this additional training called the CIT, Crisis Intervention, and they truly recognize that this person needs help, and the right kind of help would be not to take this person to the jail or take this person to the regular ER, bring him to the psych ER. And I'm on the duty, this person comes, and I'm trying to admit this person. And this person had just come out to, now this is funny, so it's his family, but he is now growing his hair and wants to be called her, and he's picked out her name. The wife then takes the children and moves out. He loses his job. Within days, a middle class, a person becomes a homeless trans person. Within days. And that's a huge, huge shock to become a homeless person. And this person is about to jump off the bridge. They bring him. And I see the first encounter. I see the first encounter that I have with a trans patient. And I am admitting this person on the floor, suggesting that she be put on the female side. And we don't actually have an official female side or a male side. It's a co. But in general, we would try to separate. And there in which was my first fight with the institutional bigotry. And I find out that they now wanted to execute my order as a physician, as I write, that this person goes on this side of the wall. And I refuse to let this person go to the floor until she gets admitted under the name that she's choosing and the gender that she's choosing. And the registrar is simply refusing to do this. And I was like, well, we're just going to wait till morning, till your supervisor comes. And that was the first fight that I fought. And that was the first time I encountered this institutional refusal to accept the person for the person that they are. And eventually, when I complete my training, I'm then more exposed to all the sexuality, the variation, everything that did not teach me in the med school. Further, everything that did not teach me in a 4 year of residency, I then had to go learn on my own by participating, by actively participating in talking to the patients. When I started my private practice, I was surprised. I moved in a very small town. Population around 80,000, Lawrence, Kansas, yeah. Also known as Larryville. We moved there. There are five or six other psychiatrists, so I'm one more. And as I go through their advertising material, and I see that none of them are going to talk about supporting the LGBT community. They're not going to talk about anything about sexuality at all. I took it upon myself then to put it on my brochure, put it on my website. We are actively going to not just be LGBT friendly. There are lots of therapists and providers out there labeling themselves as LGBT friendly. To me, that translates into tolerating. And there is a huge difference between tolerating and celebrating and affirming. And that is what I saw that was lacking in the mental health community. So what I wanted to go out and say, it is not sufficient for me to tolerate you. It is also needed to affirm your identity, to celebrate your identity, and not simply blend in and pass and just not talk about it. So we put it out there, and we were warned. We were warned by all the powers that be that you are going to be labeled as a gay psychiatrist or a alternative weirdo psychiatrist. And it's like, have you looked at me? I am a weird guy. Can you tell? Can you describe my bow tie?
He does have a pretty awesome bow tie in rainbow colors.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
I'm going to have to stop the story there for a second because we do have free station break to take.
Absolutely.
Regimes of racial segregation were not disestablished because of the work of leaders and presidents and legislators, but rather because of the fact that ordinary people adopted a critical stance in the way in which they perceive their relation to reality.
Angela Davis, Wings, Saturday, 2:30.
The 2017 Crossroads Music Fest is partnering with Mixmaster to provide the business of art, a one-day conference offering independent musicians a rare opportunity to connect, learn, and network within the industry via panel discussions, workshops, and live performance. September 9th at the Living Room, 1818 McGee, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. More information and tickets are available at cmfkc.com.
And welcome back to Trans Talk and our guest, Dr. Hiten Soni, who has an awesome rainbow tie. And it's a bow tie, and bow ties are cool, as everyone now knows, thanks to Doctor Who. So everyone warned you not to become that psychiatrist and not to deal with that funny community, and you said, I'm doing it anyway?
Absolutely. So I'm doing it anyway, and I started doing it, and turns out that nobody ever came to my office and laid on my couch and said, you know what, I don't like you, I'm going elsewhere because you support LGBT. Nobody has ever said that. In fact, I get more support from allies, and I continue to reach out to all members. So one of the things that I've learned then during my stay in Kansas, this is in the Lawrence specifically, I was so excited. I thought Lawrence, wow, you know, Blue Island in this Red Sea. Thank you so much. If anywhere I want to be, I want to be in Lawrence. Well, Lawrence, I love you. What was I supposed to say? Giving a shout out to all my peeps in Lawrence. Yes, exactly what I was told. Yes. So giving a shout out to all my peeps in Lawrence. It turns out that it's purple at best. Okay? And that is nothing to take away from any of my blue friends. All right. So when I went to the very first case step, and that's when I started meeting a lot of case step cancers. I think the yes. Transgender Education Project.
Yes.
And we've been sponsoring that conference since. And that's when I started truly learning by talking to the people. There is no book out there. There is no program out there that you can go sign up and learn. The only way to care about all people is to care about all people.
Right.
Going out there and talking and meeting and learning what the issues are.
Yes.
That's what has brought me to the forefront.
Yeah. I mean, in the medical field, it's very undercovered as well. And if you try and search on anything that's a medical resource because you realize there's a gap, you get a very sad, pathetic PDF from the CDC that just cites statistics about how people in the LGBT community are more likely to have HIV and to be drug users.
Yep.
Yeah. That's totally wrong stereotype the CDC and other government bodies that continue to perpetuate. But when you are there on the front line and meeting people, then I see firsthand that I see this regular people trying to live their lives, going to classes, trying to pay mortgage, trying to pay rent, making sure that the oil is changed, making sure that their car is working. And it's everyday things that everybody in the middle class America that struggles with. This member of LGBT community struggle with the same issue. When I get a lesbian couple and they come in and they seek me out for the relationship problem, I see the issues that get in the way. It's not any different than average middle-class 45-year-old cis heterosexual couple. And it's just amazing to see the amount of stereotypes that's out there, not just in Lawrence or Kansas in general, but when I go out to the professional conferences and talk to other psychiatrists, and they'll ask me, you do what? Why do you do that? I said, is there not enough money in prescribing Prozac? And it's like, no, there's plenty of money in prescribing Prozac. If that's what you want to do, please continue. But I want to go out there and make a difference. And that is why I'm here.
Speaking of making a difference, you said that they're the same everyday issues that everyone else has. But I think Mayer coined the term minority stress to refer to the types of stress that the LGBT community experiences. Can you tell us a bit about that and what the impacts of that are?
Very good. Very good question indeed. So here's the idea. There is this concept called in-group and out-group. Now, anybody that's been to high school, they'll tell you that eventually you got to find yourself a group. So you got jocks, and you got goths, and you got, what are some other things, the nerds, and the narcs, and right. Whatever you have. Your job in the high school 4 years is to find that in-group. And once you find yourself in in-group, there is a norm, and you fit in that norm, and that, it's a Maslow hierarchy, the need to belong. And we all have that need to belong, and we find. But when we go out in the community, And now there is a much larger population. And now you have to find that niche where you belong. And the moment you discover yourself that you are in out-group, that's when the stress starts. So there is an in-group dynamics and there is an out-group dynamics. So in out-group dynamics is a problem. So where you have to that constantly hide your membership in that out-group. And that mismatch, when the inside does not match the outside, that cis heterosexual couple can freely hold hands and kiss in public and walk down hand and nobody bats an eye. Same behavior by a out group, same behavior as a member of an out group, you must hide. And that's where the stress comes in. That you can't be who you are, your inside can't match outside in a public forum. That starts the problem. The need to belong is now not met. The society at large is now refusing to accept you as you are and your need to belong, and therefore you are out-group. And therefore, whether you are African-American, whether you are Muslim American, doesn't matter. Any hyphenated American, the decision that makes you feel like you are outgrown, and that's where the problem comes in.
Do you feel some of that aggression actually comes internally through the LGBT community?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's been kind of my experience, but I'd be interested to hear what you say.
Yeah, no, very much so. And we were talking about earlier about the pressure. So a lot of my young transgender patients, and they come in and the preoccupation is about passing. Do I look feminine enough? Do I look masculine enough? And that pressure is put upon not simply by the out-group, but then in-group, means your fellow LGBT. Now, some will refuse to believe that there are such thing as a B in LGBT. It's like, well, if you are B, what are you doing in LGBT? Because you're just supposed to be invisible because you are betraying heterosexuality people, so you're out-group there, and then you're not fitting in the LGBT. And even within T, then there is this binary, we were talking about that earlier, and Una was sharing this experience. Can I throw you in there for a second?
Throw her to the wolves?
You can always throw Una in.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So Una was sharing the experience earlier that when she... Would you share with us about you wearing skirt?
Yes, okay. Just that I've undergone criticism from people in the community, especially people that identify as gender non-conforming or non-binary, for the fact that my personal style, what makes me feel good for my gender identity and gender expression, is I dress very feminine. Part of that is because at work I am a relatively high-level person there. I have to dress very professional and corporate. I wear skirt suits. Outside of work, I wear skirts. I wear dresses. I think I've only worn trousers maybe a handful of times in the last 5 years. And I've been told that I am, by simply choosing to express my own gender identity, I am perpetuating the cisgender, heteronormative, hegemony that rules the world, and I am essentially committing hate crimes by expressing my own gender identity.
Yeah. Is that what you were referring to, Ari?
Which is, interesting, because my experience with non-binary people is, completely different.
Would you share with us?
Sure. I mean, most of the time when I meet a non-binary person, they really have absolutely no problem with me being trans. And I don't know why that is. I mean, some people speculate it's because maybe I'm male and maybe I'm not reinforcing that patriarchal
stereotype.
But I was saying, well, maybe it's really because I don't really have very many masculine interests, or maybe my energy isn't really super one way or the other. I don't know. So,
dude, you have a beard.
I do. I do have a beard.
Didn't you just go to an event with a lot of other men that were very masculine? Or can
you
talk about that?
Yeah, I went to this event called Bear Crossing, which is I guess for lack of a better term, a conference for bare, hairy gay men. And it was definitely very interesting. And apparently, most of them didn't know what I was prior to going. And then when I told them, a lot of them were, like, completely shocked, which, you know, and they were all super nice about it. They always, one guy told me, he's like, oh, my God, he's like, you're the most passable one of you I've ever seen. And I was like, oh, you should not say that to trans people.
Yes.
I said, I'm not going to take it personally, but don't say this to any other trans people.
One of you.
But see, he didn't even mean it, though, in a negative way. He thought he was doing it as a compliment. So I had to completely just say, hey, I'm okay with that, but most trans people are not okay with it. This is why.
No, I understand. Like, in Lawrence, when I'm not in the doctor hat, I'm not in the office, and I go out, I often find people talking to me slowly and loudly. Now, somehow, if I didn't speak English, you speaking slowly and loudly, I'm going to just understand English. The other time, they'll say, my goodness, you speak amazing English. Like, you are a credit to your race kind of a comment. Is that what you felt like?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I kind of just said, yeah, I mean, that's great, but...
So
I'm an immigrant, too, and, of course, I'm English, so if anyone ever compliments me on my English, I'm like, yeah, I speak English. You speak American.
Well, sometimes they ask if you have tried, you know, American food like French fries or...
or if I've met the Queen.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes, that happens all the time.
Yeah, go around for tea all the time. Yeah.
Right. And these are microaggressions towards the one that you experience are not intentional, yet they come out and very hurtful.
Right.
And the one I usually get is, do you know Dr. Patel? Like,
what?
Why? Because I'm Indian, I must know all Dr. Patel.
Right.
And I often get introduced as a Dr. Patel.
Right.
It's like, no, I'm Dr. Sony. Oh, here we have Dr. Sony Patel. It's like, no, it's Dr. Sony. Oh, it's Dr. Patel Sony. It's like, no, it's just Dr. Sony.
Okay, I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Sony, just Sony Patel.
There you go.
I was going to actually ask you about microaggressions today, because if you react to a microaggression because you've had so many of them, or if you try and report it to HR, it sounds like a really stupid little thing, and everyone's like, why are you making a big deal about this? So how would you recommend people handle that?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the first thing I like to do when you recognize the microaggression, you're the recipient, and that's the first time that you recognize the microaggression. So one of the first thing that I recommend, what is similar to what Ari did, is to non-confrontational approach, reaching out to the very person and pointing it out to them that perhaps you didn't mean this, but this is how it came out. And in my experience, majority of the people, even in Kansas, majority of people, not in Lawrence, Lawrence is good, the people will then respond, and they are wanting to say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I was actually trying to compliment. And then that becomes a lot easier. But the problem then often happens is that when we become confrontational, and sometimes rightfully so, after listening to 99 microaggression, the 100th one, you're going to explode.
Yeah.
I recommend the very first one that you hear, you start reaching out to a, for a lack of word, perpetrator. These are not perpetrators, but somebody who's aggressor. You reach out to them from the very first, and you process your emotion from the very first exposure, which allows you to not build that up inside, and then eventually you don't have to go to HR and it explodes.
What about, a lot of the time, jokes are used as microaggression or even as a method of control. The humor of the in-group, others, and makes outside and makes okay to laugh at the outer people, the out-group.
Yeah.
What about those when you comment on that and say, that made me feel bad, please don't do that, and they go, oh, it was just a joke.
Very good. So this is where you bring up a very good point. There is this huge phenomena that we find in our popular culture. If you put LOL at the most insulting comment, somehow you are absolved. You just put LOL. Ah, you are an idiot. LOL. Ha ha ha. Ha ha. It's like, oh, I didn't mean it. Whether you meant it or not. just saying LOL at the end does not absolve you. Just saying I didn't mean it or I am joking does not absolve one. Whether you intended to hurt others' feelings or not, it's not important. The result is that you ended up hurting.
And then you say to someone, that made me feel bad, and they're like, it was funny. And it's like, no, it's not funny, it's hurtful. And then they're like, oh, you're always playing the victim card.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah, that's another comment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, I was going to ask you if I tend to handle these situations with humor and, like, back talk, and it seems to help me, but that's because I'm usually dealing with men, not so much women. But, I mean, I hear all sorts of, like, insulting things, sexist. I mean, I'm actually a water engineer, too, so you probably know.
Yeah, that's what you were talking.
I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, hey, we'll talk later. We'll talk about water.
Definitely, because I work on the water side where Una works on the power side. And I can give you, like, an example. When I go to the plants, this one guy basically was probably looked confused or, I don't know, annoyed or something because it was confusing. And he's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, oh, nothing. And I'm, like, trying to mark up a drawing. He's like, oh, is it hard? And I'm like, yeah, it's hard. And he's like, well, you know, if it was easy, we'd have a girl do it. And I literally, like, was shocked. And then I started laughing due to the irony of the incomplete situation because, I mean, what can you do after that? And I said, well, you know, honestly, if a girl was doing it, they'd probably do it twice as fast with, like, six other things going on. That's how I deal with that kind of, like, derogatory banter. So I don't know if that's something you think is a healthy way of dealing with it, but that's kind of what I've done my entire life. So.
Yeah. Well, that's one way to do it. We often use humor as a defense mechanism.
Right.
And whenever the word defense mechanism comes up, I only want to take a 30 seconds to ask my friends when they use it. Oh, it's a defense mechanism. And I ask, well, what are you defending against? What is the offense that you need the defense against? And the idea is that when they use the humor, the defense is against the internal anxiety that they are experiencing.
Yeah, and mostly just to show other people that I don't agree with it. Even though I laugh, I say, oh, that's cute, but you're really being stupid, so I'm just going to, like, mock you instead. In a playful way where it doesn't upset them, but at the mm-hmm. same time, everyone else that's listening to this realizes I don't really agree with it. It's like a compromise, I guess. So.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
And so often people use that and they hide behind that humor. And it's like, oh, well, I was just joking, or you're being overly sensitive, or you're always being the victim. And I understand. And I say, I always recommend, even the first time, not to let it slide and bring it up non-confrontationally. It is some changes. Let's talk about a little bit of changes, okay? Some changes, this is my favorite topic to talk about, changes. Some changes come very, very gradually. Grand Canyon. Okay, yeah. Very, very gradually. And not 6,000 years, but gradually, millions of years to get to Grand Canyon. The Himalayas were overnight. The two tectonic plates colliding. One day it wasn't there, next day it is there. So there are two ways we can create changes. And this is one of the changes that's going to happen very, very gradually, where everyone takes out a grain of sand from a huge rock, and eventually there's a Grand Canyon. And this is the kind of a change that we need to bring in our society. And having elected the current president, okay, I'm sorry, was I not supposed to? I thought we were supposed to go
yes,
there.
Yes, we are.
Okay,
well, I just can't help pulling that face when you mention he's president.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, I felt that over here. Yes. So out in the radio land, it was a little face that I was reacting to. So the idea was that we want to bring changes, and one of the ways we bring the changes is a gradual, and every microaggression should be addressed. Every microaggression should be addressed in a non-confrontational way with this sole intent that in long term we will bring that change.
What about, I mean, you've obviously seen a rise in stress since not just the election, but the whole election cycle and the increase in hate speech during it.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. So on the night of the election, I often share my personal cell phone, which is like I'm hardly away from more than a feet, and my wife and I was arguing about that. Say, you love that phone. No, I'm not sure. She doesn't sound like that. You love that phone more than I do, and I'm always next to my phone. The reason is that I'm always sharing my phone, personal cell phone number, with a select group of patients. And it's like, if you ever need, call me 3 a.m. It doesn't matter. And most of them do not abuse it. At night of the election, it didn't stop ringing. I had 7 phone calls before the morning, and people wanting, what do I have to do to get the Canadian visa? It's like, well, go to sleep, and we'll wait till morning, and then we will do it. But right now, I need you to go to sleep. Anxiety started that night, and it hasn't stopped. It hasn't stopped. Within first few days after the election, it became terrible, not just from the LGBT members, but in general, a lot of the population, a lot of the citizens of Larryville started experiencing some of these experiences about this increased anxiety. And we continued to talk about that. The night of the election, we got few, and it continued after that. And now we are seeing more and more and more patients coming out wanting treatment, and many of them are now wanting to, I think the new phrase is go stealth, and that they're wanting to retreat back into the closet, as if it were. The fear that the one experiences when The very top, the president himself comes out and says things that are very hateful, things that are not grounded in reality, they're not grounded in any sort of reality whatsoever.
But people absorb it as if it is reality because he says it.
Exactly. So when it comes from the top, and then it becomes okay for the groups that were on the fringe to come out and become mainstream. And even though their total number is low, the total number of these people on the fringe group is low, yet when they are given the main center stage and they are given this extra attention, the legitimacy that is given right in the White House and going down, when we start equating the evil and saying the good, and the good and evil are opposite, and they are equally good or equally bad, and there is a problem. There isn't a moral equivalency between the two groups. When one, the very top commander comes up and says that both sides have bad people, and there is a problem.
Thank you. Well, we'll get back to talking about that, but we're going to have to take another short station break. So, Una?
Support for KKFI provided by KCPT, presenting an exclusive evening with award-winning filmmakers Ken Burns and Lynn Novick, Friday, September 8th, around their upcoming documentary series, The Vietnam War.
It's hard rain, they're gonna fall.
You'll see select clips from the epic 18-hour series, which Burns calls the most ambitious project they've ever done. Two local veterans featured in the documentary will join Burns and Novick on stage for a conversation about the war and its impact. Tickets at AXS.com.
The 2017 Crossroads Music Fest on September the 9th will include free day parties sponsored by Josie Records, with live music from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Josie Records, 1814 Oak, and Brewery Imperial, 1829 Oak. Also new this year, pop-up shops with local makers in the Josie Records parking lot from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. More information is available at cmfkc.com.
Welcome back to Trans Talk. We're here with the doctor and his bow tie, and we were talking about a much more serious issue, the amount of stress in people after the election.
Oh, you've been waiting. You've probably been waiting for months to say something like, we're here with the doctor in his bow tie. Oh, my God.
He just needs a fez, and then he'd be perfect.
and during the break, we were joking that I've been practicing. May I try out my British accent, please?
Yeah. I don't know. Is it okay. A microaggression?
No, it's not. It's not. It is me trying to imitate. I'm the doctor.
There you go.
Well, thank you. All right.
Okay. Yeah, don't call us, we'll call you. But speaking of calling, you said that you've given your phone number out to people so they can call you, and you had so many more calls.
Yes.
How has that continued as the time has gone on, and the behavior, if anything, has got worse?
Yeah. So the night calls have reduced, but the total number of visits, the volume of visits have gone up. And we are specifically addressing the angst that the LGBT population is experiencing. So now we have 14, 16-year-olds in high school are not wanting to dress differently, not wanting to join LGBT clubs.
I know ones that aren't drinking because they don't want to use the restroom during the day because they'll have to use the wrong restroom or a separate restroom which outs them as something different.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is this out-group stress that we were talking about, and that is causing performance issue. That is causing the grades problem. We see increased emergency room visits, people wanting to talk more about suicide. The suicide line calls have increased, and the numerous statistics that shows that the people in the patients, the people, however you want to say it, persons in the LGBT community are experiencing then increased level of stress, primarily from this open season for the bigotry and the hate groups to come out and get that mainstream voice. The more legitimacy, seeing them in the mainstream media, walking around, saying things out loud that has been not acceptable in the past. And all of a sudden, if the president says it, other elected officials say it, then somehow it becomes okay for somebody at the bar to say it.
So given that you can't change anything about the president or the elected officials for nearly 2 years, how would you recommend that people handle that stress to protect their health and their mental well-being?
Very good. One of the best way to do it then is to increase the membership in the in-group. So in the group that you belong to, then if you increase the number in that strength and bringing in, so this is the time then for all G's and B's and T's and the non-binaries and fluids and Q and A, everyone to come together under one umbrella and unify their voice and then show that there is the strength. We need to do just the opposite. We do not need to go out and confront every single evil rally, but what we need to do then is to start gathering, organizing, and showing that we belong. We belong, and we are not going to go away. We're not going to go in stealth mode. And that is what I want to encourage by coming out here today and say, if you are experiencing this fear, if you are experiencing this anxiety that the nation has now taken on this aura of hostility towards the member of the LGBT community, then let us come together and show our strength in numbers. The more we stand divided, more likely we are that we would fall.
Yeah. Have a thought. No, I completely agree with you. I mean, I think every trans person has this, like, conversation with themselves, debating whether they should be out and tell people that they're trans. Of course, you know, their personal safety always being involved, and then just disappearing, because many of us can. So it's almost like a transitional community in a sense. Like, I always felt that way when I lived in Florida. People would come out they'd realize, oh, I don't have to be part of this community anymore, and then just become stealth and live their normal lives. It's a really hard choice to make. I decided not to do that, and I'm kind of glad every day. And one thing that I had to do is when I read the news, I had to change the conversation with myself, because I knew I couldn't always depend on the L or the G or the B, and a lot of ways the T, too, to come and rally with us. And that's been my experience, unfortunately, and that's kind of why I kind of touched upon the in-group aggression, right? Because that's been more of my experience in general. But I mean, I had to literally sit down and say, okay, the president of the free world doesn't feel I'm good enough to take a bullet for this place. How am I going to change that conversation to myself and be positive towards myself and realize that these people don't dictate my self-worth? So, and it took a long time. So, but I definitely agree with you. I wish we could come more together, and I think we are, but I think it's just sexuality and gender identity are different things, and I think it's a struggle. So.
And sometimes even the trans men and the trans women don't want to talk to each other because they're guys and they're girls. And it's like, this is not high school. This is not when you're five and you're made to do dance classes at school or something. You're not going to get girl cooties or anything.
So what we are wanting is the advocating for the civil rights. And that's what we are wanting. We are not asking for special rights. We are asking for the civil rights, and we are advocating for the civil rights. And I'm glad you brought up the taking a bullet for the country. And then the you want to go there?
I know that we already talked about the wonderful memos and actually finally putting things into play. How the trans people must feel in the military at the moment is appalling.
Yeah, it is. And the way that it was done, so I just read the actual the language of the memo, as they were saying earlier. So he, in this memorandum that he has put out, he's pointing out two objections that to the Obama administration's the policy. And he says, one is that it's about the readiness and the decisiveness with which the military can act. And the second is the tremendous cost and the disruption. And when we looked it up earlier, the population of the United States, 326 million. Kansas City, Missouri population, 434,000. Lawrence, a small town, population of 87,000. The population of the U.S. military, 1.3 million. Okay. So we're getting some numbers. Okay. Now, in a small community like Lawrence, I have about 20 transgender patients. The entire military does about 30. 1.3 million. They will do about 30 transgender treatment per year. In a small community like Lawrence, I see 20 patients. It is utterly nonsense. If you look at the numbers, it does not add up.
Yeah, that's a complete drop in the bucket. And I'd like to thank you very much today for coming and talking to us. And I'm going to cut across to a very short version of our Kansas City Community Calendar for the month. And you can find this on our Facebook page, on the 10th Voice Facebook page, because I'm shortening it because the conversation was just too interesting. So, first up, UMKC has returned to school, and their first Trans Plus social group is Monday, 28th of August, 5 to 7 p.m. in the Rainbow Lounge at the Student Union. I also have to mention their Pride Alliance open house on Thursday, 31st of August at 6:30 p.m. in Student Union, room 319, because they will be providing pizza, and that's important. You can find them on Facebook at https://www.facebook.com/UMKCLGBTQIA or in the Student Union building in rooms 320 and 325. And Transfinity KC has returned from their summer break. There'll be an open rehearsal on August the 29th, gathering at 6:30 p.m. and starting at 7 p.m. September 5th will be the placement interviews for all singers, whether old or new, and time slots will start at 6 p.m. And all rehearsals will be at Country Club Congregational United Church of Christ, 205 West 65th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. And there are lots and lots of other things happening this month, so I would like to encourage you to go out to our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/the10th voice, and the community calendar for the upcoming month will magically appear there at 2 o'clock. Una, would you like to close out the show?
No, I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed talking to you, Dr. Soni. This was a really interesting episode, and I always get a lot of hope when I listen to you. It just sort of comes through in your voice, and I hope that a lot of our listeners also had some encouragement as well from, you know, listening to you talk a little bit about the stressors that are impacting the LGBT, and especially the T community, because after all, this is trans talk.
Yes.
Well, thank you for having me, Una. Fiona, thank you. It was very...
And Ari, don't forget Ari.
Yeah, Ari. I was trying to remember your name.
It's
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Ari.
It's all right.
All right. So thank you for inviting me, and it was such a pleasant experience for me. I hope I get to come back and do it again.
We always enjoy having you on. Maybe next time we could open up the phone lines and have you take calls from people.
Oh, yes.
Like on Frasier.
Frasier style.
Yes, I always want to say that. Kansas City, I'm listening.
That was better than your English accent. Yeah. Well, thank you very much today for tuning in to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. Many thanks to our special guest, Dr. Hiten Soni, our sound engineer and producer and co-hostess, my wonderful wife, Una Nowling, and our friend and guest co-host, Ari Copeland. Remember that you can always send an email with your thoughts and suggestions to the10thvoice@gmail.com or message us through our Facebook page. Next up, stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman with Sharon Lockhart, Amy Bell, and Fiona, me, myself, and my wife Una, and Ari are going to be taking part in a live broadcast from the Unicorn Theatre today. So don't forget to tune in for that. And be sure to join the 10th Voice next weekend as well, Saturday at 1 p.m. for more discussion of LGBT topics and events which shape our lives and our world. You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.